Good afternoon, Sarah. How are you?
Hi, Kathy. Well, thanks. And you?
Very well, thank you. Let's talk about labor. I've actually asked our listeners, you know, if there was one thing that you, you know, if you were, not you, Sarah, if you were the Minister of Labor in this country, what would you do to put the country to work? And we've got so many different answers from, let's have a look here, from training artisans to building, developing entrepreneurs, all of these things. What's your thought? I mean,
what is the one thing I would do?
Yeah. If you were the,
get out of the way of the private sector.
Okay.
Essentially, I mean, you talk about, I mean, I'm absolutely with the training and entrepreneurs. And in fact, funny enough, relay a couple of good news stories in that front. But it's really about giving as much space as possible without contravening, sort of the necessary protective labor laws and creating environments, particularly that get young people into employment, because they are such a large proportion of the unemployed. And almost anything, and there are a range of measures one can take, but almost anything that will get youngsters into employment is crucial, because they don't have experience. They need to learn. So they are by nature going to start at the bottom, but we all start at the bottom. And once you start, you're likely to go up. But unless, if you don't get that start, you don't go up.
You said something really interesting. Sorry. You said, the necessary labor laws. I mean, that is such a difficult, balance to acquire. I mean, what does one do about minimum wage? What does one do about the right to hire and fire? What is, how does one find this balance, especially in a country where there's a overflow of labor?
Yeah. You'll be pleased to know that I don't think there should be a minimum wage. But I'll come back to that if you want me to. But essentially, I think one of the things they can do is, for example, because hiring and firing and the rules pertaining to probation, employment, fixed-term contract, etc., have become tighter and tighter and tighter, it's in order to encourage the employment of youth, you want to loosen it up as much as possible. And you can say for a year or a year and a half, whatever, you can actually put a time limit on it, but a reasonable time limit. Give a new employee the chance to prove themselves. And in that respect, you can relax a whole lot of things. And the older employees, the more experienced employees would stay in their place, would be protected. But the youngsters, employers will be more likely to take a chance with them. And you often hear the trade union saying that, you know, if they had relaxation or something of this nature or anything like that, that people would, older or more experienced people would be retrenched. And that's absolute nonsense. I don't know why they get away with it, because there are very strict retrenchment laws and they're very strict bases on which you can retrench and the order in which you can retrench. And usually, with very few exceptions, but there are some, older people with experience will be the last people to be retrenched. So, and those are the people who are unionized. So I'm not really sure what's behind that. But you really want the flexibility with the youth, because if you have the flexibility, you are all more likely as an employer to invest in training people. But if you're going to train and then be hidebound, you may say, look, I'm not going to bother. I'll stick with what I've got.
I hear you. I actually see it in my day job. I look at the number of, what do they call them? The youngsters that they bring on. Oh man, what's the word? I've just completely lost it. apprenticeship type jobs.
Internships,
that's the word I was after. It's really quite remarkable, because I would say 90% of them stay on and they've been given careers.
Absolutely. I mean, we have interns quite often, and being an NGO, I don't think we can offer much more than daily transport. But I look at one young girl. She's 20 years old. She's bright. She tries hard. She has now been given a set of skills to film interviews and podcasts, download them, do whatever you need to do to get them out. Now, I'm sure the last thing she expected to do in the context of coming to a think tank was to gain a set of skills that open up an entire possible career. And in that respect, you know, the what you gain compared to what you may not be paid is actually huge. And suddenly two worlds have opened up to her.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You also mentioned this minimum wage story, which I find absolutely fascinating because I don't know. I think that's maybe why liberalism is a bad name out there. What is your stance on it? Because it's interesting. Kathy and I were talking in the studio. We were saying we're both quite pro it.
Yeah. Now I'll tell you what my position is. You know, between the demand for people with skills and the unionization of staff, the majority of staff with some experience will be earning way above a minimum wage. The thing about having no minimum wage is even if someone gets a lousy wage, if it's an opportunity to get on that ladder, and again, youth are my main concern, then so be it. You see, the more skills you obtain and the more successful you are in a position, the greater your bargaining power grows. I know there's a minimum wage fairly quite a bit lower for domestic workers, that's in law. And I saw a report the other day that said people are increasingly not employing or retrenching their domestics because with the economic situation, they are so squeezed that what they feel they can do themselves, they will do. And the problem is the people who have no choice, where the supply is much greater than the demand, run that sort of risk. Of course, you know, exploitation, the Labor Department is there to deal with exploitation. And it will happen, but it's not a hugely prevalent thing. There's way too much protection in place. And also, you know, this is a society that, the minute something gets out about an employer behaving particularly badly, it will get out. I mean, the very few instances remain hidden. As I say, not perfect, but it certainly offers, it essentially offers people to sell what little skill they have with a view to gaining more.
Such an interesting take, and that almost is such a, the dilemma of living in South Africa is that terrible. We are so wealthy and so poor that we have to make some very difficult decisions. Decisions that aren't made.
Essentially, your biggest, when I talked about, you know, keep moving out of the way of the private sector, from experience both ways, when I've seen it in the last few years that new entities run by, you know, energetic youngish people who can employ people are desperately trying not to, because along with all the other red tape that goes into creating a business and maintaining one, it's just that they are trying to have as little legal responsibility as possible, because it can end up taking up so much of their time that their business, they really cannot develop their businesses. I think the first option is a better risk than the existence of the latter.
Yeah. Amazing. So, Aragon, that is where we unfortunately have to leave it this week.
Cool.
But, believe that coming up next week, we're going to be speaking to, well, not in this slot, but certainly at some point on the station, we're definitely going to be talking about the appropriation bill. So looking forward to that.
No, great. That's super.
All right. So Aragon, Shabbat Shalom.
And Shalom to you too.
Yeah, we'll chat to you. In fact, Simon and I are standing in for Howard Feldman on the Morning Mayhem next week. But you're going to be speaking to Benji Shulman. So have a good
she's
one.
Laughing.
She's laughing already. Yeah, she knows how ridiculous.
I'm sure I can get a few colleagues together and we can really make people's hair stand on end.
Okay, there we go. Let's do it. That's Aragon, policy fellow.